My name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. This episode was recorded on Sunday, June 26, 2016, starting at 2:29 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 81st episode of the show. For more information about how to subscribe to the podcast and help support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with Austin Coppock and Kelly Surtees about the astrological forecast for the month of July of 2016, as well as giving a few auspicious dates over the course of the month for beginning different types of ventures and undertakings using the principles of electional astrology. Kelly and Austin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, Austin.
Hey, happy to be here.
All right. It has been a busy month, both for me, I think, personally, but also just in the world in general. There's been a lot of stuff going on. What have you guys been up to? Kelly, I think you last time we talked to you, you were getting ready to head off to the Northwest Astrological Conference, right?
Yes. So I have been on the move. I've only been home for a week, actually. So I went to the Northwest Astrological Conference, NORWAC, which was amazing, out in Seattle. And then from there, went out to Sydney to spend a couple of weeks, both working with my students and clients out there, but also catching up with family. So in true kind of with that mutable cross, I was wandering the globe, which was, it's a very happy place for me. How about you, Austin?
I actually had to take my schedule down a notch because I've been pushing so hard this spring. And so I took a 2-week break from writing my weekly column, which was great and sort of allowed me to replenish my reserves mentally. And so, I was still working full time during that. It just was one thing off my plate, but I'm back to writing. And let's see what else did. I did a lot of Kung Fu and Tai Chi. I set myself like a 2 hours a day minimum. And so I've done that for pretty much all of June.
Awesome. Yeah. I know you were saying you're feeling pretty overwhelmed or like run down in the last forecast episode, like right at the top of the show.
Yeah. And when I looked at June's configurations, especially those mutable grand crosses, and I have a mutable grand cross. And so, I knew that I would either just sort of shred myself in an attempt to keep up, or I could just take a little bit of a breather, catch my breath. And so I decided to catch my breath and do not regret it in the slightest.
Totally. Well, but you'll be back to, I guess, both of you are getting ready for a busy summer, or what's the plan for the summer?
Oh yeah, definitely busy. Straight back into teaching my online classes for me. So my most recent class just is running at the moment on an intro to predictions on transits and progressions. So that'll run through till the end of July. And then I head out to San Francisco, where I'm doing a talk and will be seeing clients at the end of July there. And then back to Seattle at the end of August for a 3-day workshop that I'm teaching or co-teaching with Laura Nalbandian and Kira Sutherland. We're focusing on the moon for 3 days. So if anybody's interested, feel free just to get in touch and I can send them more info. But it will definitely be a fun, full summer.
Awesome. And what do you have coming up, Austin?
Oh, let's see. On Saturday, July 9th, I start a month-long unit on aspects, which is a module in my foundations class. It's part of a larger arc of classes, but people are free to join just that one. And then I'm going to be doing a new class that I haven't taught before. I'm going to teach Wednesday nights. It's going to start on Wednesday, July 13th. And in my mind, I'm calling it the proper care and feeding of a natal chart. And it's about wellness and remediation. It's sort of, okay, so you have a chart and you have a life and you'd like to get the most out of that. How do you bring things into balance if they're out of whack? How do you polish your strengths and recognize your weaknesses? Like, what do you do with that? So it's sort of, I guess you'd call it a wellness model. And we're doing things like figuring out which planets are going to be the strongest and most favorable in the chart and which ones are going to be the problem areas. And then, what to do about that, like what habits to install in your life to make the most out of your, your best planets and, to try to bring the ones that aren't so good up to speed. So that's, it's a different kind of class because it's not just straight technical material. It's sort of like, what do we do with this? And I've been thinking about it for a long time. So I'm finally, I think I'm finally ready to teach that though. I think it'll be really interesting and fun. So, you know, there's remediation, which is fixing problems, but there's also just like, you know, running the things that aren't in of themselves a huge problem, like how to stay in balance and keep in balance. Anyway, so that's the, that's that. I think it should be interesting. What am I doing? I guess I'm also, I'll be writing all summer. I've got next week's column ready to go. Got my July monthly almost ready to go. And I'll be writing every week and every month. And I guess my last thing I'm doing over the season is I'm going to be finishing up editing the Planetary Magic anthology that I've been working on for some time. I'm a co-editor on that and also a contributor. So I'm going to polish that off and hopefully it'll be out before Christmas. It'll be out. It'll be coming out through Three Hands Press. And yeah, what else am I going to do? I don't know. I might have some fun. I might see Kelly in the Bay Area in July. It depends on when she's there.
Oh, cool.
What for? Oh, yeah. That, so that's the workshop Kelly's doing. What are you going to be in the Bay Area for?
Oh, we have a wedding.
Oh, nice. Excellent. All right. It sounds like you guys both have a lot going on. For me, I'm just writing still. I've been making amazing progress. I just finished a chapter on the triplicity rulers and a chapter on the rulers of the houses and another chapter on perfections. So I'm on track possibly to have my manuscript finished by August, and it's actually turning into a full book. So that's going to be my main focus between now and most of the summer. Let's see. In other news, we actually have a few pieces of sort of news going on in the community to mention just before we get into the thick of things with the forecast and with the auspicious elections. So the first one I wanted to put out right away, I wanted to mention right at the top of the show because it's sort of relevant to the podcast, is that ESAR is sending out these announcements. They've suddenly started sending out these announcements that they're giving out an award at their upcoming conference in October for the best audiovisual production. And right now there's an open call for nominations, but it's only open for the next few days. It ends on June 30th. But apparently, whatever they're defining as audiovisual production includes podcasts. So the initial phase of this is basically that you send an email into ESAR nominating a podcast or a YouTube series or something that you think has done a good job as being an audiovisual production in the astrological community. And the show that has the top five nominations will then be voted on by the ESAR membership sometime between now and November. And then one of them will like win an award at the ESAR conference in October. So if you'd like to nominate the Astrology Podcast for this award for best audiovisual production, then you should send an email to Glenn Perry, which is glenn@aaperry.com, saying that you'd like to nominate the Astrology Podcast and giving them the link to it. Please also CC Sam Reynolds, another ESAR board member, on the email, whose email address is unlockastrology@gmail.com. I'll put both of these so you don't have to, you know, attempt to, you know, recreate what these email addresses are just from audio. I'll put both of the email addresses on the description page for this episode. And basically, if the podcast gets enough nominations in the next few days, then it could win an award, which would be kind of cool. So if you're a fan of the show, then please send in a nomination and we'll see what happens. I don't know if I can I, are you two ESAR members? Can I get you to talk you two into nominating it? Or would that be like a conflict of interest if you're guests on the show?
I don't know. It could cost.
Yeah, I mean, we can try.
Of course we can.
All right.
I mean, I'm an ESAR regular member. I'm sure you are too, Austin.
I am. I mean, if I remember to pay my dues, I don't remember. I know that I was paying my dues at some point.
I think I just did the lifetime thing once. I worked out based on my age was probably just better value to do since I did tend to be in this industry for a long time. So yeah, we could totally, if they don't want our votes, they'll tell us.
Right. I think that's a good philosophy for everyone, even for delinquent ESAR members like Austin and Kelly. Just send in your email to Glenn and Sam nominating the show in the next few days, and then we'll see what happens from there. So in other conference news, there was also a recent announcement where there was an open call for new UX speakers. So the upcoming conference, a huge like mega conference, it's not a normal sort of little or mid-sized conference. This is like the biggest conference that takes place two or three times in a decade, called the United Astrology Conference. And the next one is happening in Chicago in May of 2018. So 2 years from now. And they've just put out an announcement of an open call for new speakers. So if you haven't spoken at a previous UAC before, then this is your chance to apply. Basically, what you do, if you have to send in a recording of an example lecture that you've given in the past. So a lecture no longer than, I think they said, like 90 minutes. And the deadline is July 31st, 2016. So any sort of professional astrologers out there, or any, you know, long-term astrology enthusiasts that give lectures on astrology and want a chance to present your research or your work at a really significant conference, this is your chance. And you've got basically a month to send in a lecture and a bio and stuff like that. And with any luck, it'll be selected. And then we'll be seeing you at this conference in Chicago in 2 years. So I'm going to put the link on the description page for this episode to the full details page and the form that they're sending out. It's like an online form that you have to fill out. So just look for the description page for that, and good luck to everybody who's applying. You guys.
It's a great opportunity. This was how I was successful to speak at UAC in 2012. I went through the new speaker submission process. Of course, it's popular. There'll probably be between 100 and 200 people that will apply through this process. So part of the application process involves uploading an MP3 of a lecture you've given at maybe your local group, or maybe you've spoken at a conference somewhere else since UAC 2012. But as long as you haven't spoken at UAC itself, you can apply. And it's well worth, just throw your hat in the ring. You give yourself a chance if you're interested in doing that going forward.
Yeah. And like you said, it's going to be hugely competitive. I mean, this is people from all over the world. It's open to people from all over the world. And UAC tends to be much more of an international conference than other conferences.
Put your best speech that you've ever done. Make sure you use that. And don't feel that you can't apply if you're not from North America. Because it is, as you say, Chris, it's totally international.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what one of my favorite parts about it is, just you get to see so many and catch up with so many different astrologers. But yeah, definitely apply and put your best foot forward. It is, you know, not a ton of people are going to make it in. I submitted this way for UAC 2008, and I actually got rejected both for my initial application as well as for like a free speech position. And then I lucked out because somebody else dropped out at the last minute, and I happened to take that person's slot like a week before the conference or something like that. So even amazing astrologers such as myself do not necessarily make it in when they apply this way, but it's worth a shot.
Oh, Chris, that's hilarious.
All right. So that's the second announcement. The other announcement is just that we're doing our June giveaway drawing in the next episode, in the Q&A episode that we're going to record in the next few days. And so we're going to give away two prizes, and it's only for patrons of the show who donate on the $5 or $10 tiers, but there's still time to sign up. So the first thing we're giving away on the $10 tier is a scholarship, a free pass to the upcoming ESAR conference in October. And then the second thing we're giving away is a free one-year subscription to the Mountain Astrologer magazine. And we'll talk a little bit more about those two things later on. But in other related news, we've actually almost met our fundraising goal to the next sort of fundraising level that we were shooting for, which is now going to allow me to send microphones out to every new guest in order to help improve the audio quality of the show. And you've already seen a bit of that over the last month or so of episodes. So it'll just take actually a few more signups in order to put us over the line. So if anybody wants to sign up and also get the potential of an additional bonus, if you might win this drawing to go to the ESAR conference or win a subscription to TMA, then that's sort of an added benefit in addition to helping us to improve and continue to produce the show. So I think I think that's it in terms of announcements. Should we move on to the forecast, the astrology for the month?
Let's do it.
All right. So, looking at astrological signatures for July, I think we all talked a little bit about what was going on. And there's not like a lot of stuff. I think all of us kind of agreed that there weren't, compared to other months in this year or other time periods, there weren't like a lot of huge things happening. But really, a lot of what's happening is we're still coming down off of or feeling the immediate after effects of some of the astrological alignments that are still taking place in June, or and either just happened or are about to happen in the next week, such as, for example, the Mars retrograde station, or when it stations direct here in the next few days of June. And one of the things that might be useful is just talking a little bit about, there's actually been some events over the past few weeks where it's actually been a very, you know, crazy month in terms of world events that kind of connects with some of the things that we predicted in terms of what the general feel of June would be like. Do either of you want to take that over in terms of major events that stood out to you over the course of the last month?
Well, there, you know, let's see, things that were a big deal. Well, there's the Brexit referendum, which only happened a few days ago. And then I believe Obama had an immigration bill blocked, if that's correct. And so these are, you know, both of these issues tie in very tightly, very neatly with what we were saying about the Saturn-Neptune square, which was which made its second exact pass during the middle of June. You know, we have borders with Saturn, and then we have what crosses those borders and what's allowed to cross those borders, and where are the borders really with Neptune? And so that lined up very neatly. We also, with Mars slowing down, even though Mars hasn't quite stationed yet as of this recording, Mars has slowed down to a crawl, and there have been a lot of events which testify to the upcoming station. I think we can also read the Brexit vote in that light. You know, it is a profound separation, right? Like it's a vote for separation. It's a vote against. And sure. Against.
Somebody said that was like prominent in the chart of the EU or something.
I believe so. And then Nina Griffin actually wrote about Brexit in February and ended up being fantastically accurate. And it's nice to see people, you know, writing months and months and months and months ahead of time rather than sort of frantically scrambling to be like, well, it's going to happen in 2 days. I'm an astrologer, you know. Not that I haven't done that. Not that that's, you know, not that that's a terrible sin. But it's just nice to see someone, you know, writing calmly 5 months ahead of time, looking at the Aries ingress chart and saying, well, there's a Mars retrograde. It's right up there and it indicates this. So
yeah, it's always more impressive to see somebody, you know, issue a prediction of that magnitude, like, you know, ways ahead of time versus, you know, much closer to the fact.
Not unlike your prediction about Hillary Clinton years ago, which is looking more and more as if it will come to pass. And just as a note for astrologers doing predictions, I think that a lot of times it's easier to just look at the astrology when you're not in the middle of things. You know, it's very confusing to look at things as they are developing. Whereas, you know, sometimes years ahead of time, it can be easier to, or months ahead of time, you know, when you're not in the middle of the storm, you know, it's easier to see a storm system on radar than it is to report live, like those funny reporters who get
hit. Standing in the middle of the storm. Nina's article is fantastic for readers who want to look it up. It's called The Astrology of the Brexit Referendum, and it was published on her website on the 20th of February, 2016. And one of the things she identified in that article was something that we talked about in our last episode, which was the significance of this 23-degree marker of Scorpio and Taurus. And interestingly, Nina has included the chart of the European Union in this article, which has Mars at 24 Scorpio opposite the moon at 24 Taurus. So this Mars station is kind of vibing that opposition 24 Taurus Scorpio, which is in the EU chart. So it's kind of interesting that we'd said that degree was going to be significant and we've got this major separation. Because what people are talking about with this Brexit is that not only is Britain, of course, leaving the EU, but what does this mean for the future of the EU as a whole? And so there are some pundits speculating that is this sort of the beginning of the end of the EU as it stands. So that's really interesting, you know, to what you're saying there, Austin, around the idea of Mars as a vote for separation.
Yeah, well, and so what's interesting is the EU is basically having a double malefic return because it has Saturn at 14 degrees Sagittarius. So right. it's been having its second Saturn return while having a Mars return, a super Mars return. Although, you know, there's a that referendum was not binding in and of itself.
No,
and it did occur while Mars was still retrograde. So, you know, Britain may or may not end up leaving the EU, and leaving may look different than people imagine. But it was a hammer blow to confidence in that union. And there's certainly cracks spider webbing out from that. Like it was a huge thing, regardless of what Britain actually does. It was a big event.
Huge. And I think that kind of then brings in the Saturn Neptune square, which peaked in the middle of June, but really doesn't separate by more than 2 degrees until we get this third hit in September. So we're still sort of under that cloud.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right, Austin, because even though this referendum says, you know, 52% of the Brits want to leave, that we don't know what leaving looks like. And the process of leaving is a 2-year process in which there's huge amounts of negotiations and discussions. So I think there's something in that to the symbolism of the Saturn Neptune, which is maybe having a vision for a change, but not knowing exactly what it will look like by the time it becomes made manifest, which would be the Saturn portion of that.
Well, and the other thing was also, I mean, and, you know, I don't live in the UK and I wasn't following this very closely politically. So I can't, you know, I don't want to like piss anyone off by like mentioning certain, you know, speculations about the implications of this or different things like that. But from my, you know, unenlightened sort of standpoint, one of the things I thought was interesting in the immediate aftermath was a lot of people were saying that some of the reasons that were given, or some of the things that people voted for the exit, or some of the reasons that people gave for voting for the exit, or some of the things that the campaign for Britain to leave the EU were based on, were somehow, even immediately after the vote, said to be false, like that 250, you know, million pounds or something that was being given to the EU each year would instead be directed towards Britain or something like that. And so that even some of the premise of some of the arguments that were made about why they should leave may not have been on completely like solid ground. That really struck me as sort of like a Saturn Neptune type issue in terms of, you know, the potential for illusions or sort of a lack of clarity surrounding, you know, why we were even, they were even going for this specific change.
Yeah, I mean, it really brings in this whole redefining boundaries and borders piece. And, you know, Scotland, which is part of the United Kingdom, there's been a bit of an uproar there because they voted a couple of years ago to remain in the United Kingdom because they wanted to remain as part of the EU. So now there's potentially going to be another referendum just in Scotland about whether they then break away from the United Kingdom because they want to stay in the EU and Britain doesn't. So there's, I mean, it's almost left more questions than answers. And that murkiness of Saturn Neptune is just so clearly coming through.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and it, Scotland voted overwhelmingly to stay.
To stay in the EU. Yeah.
Yeah, so they did. And so did Northern Ireland. Yes. Because Ireland is in the EU. Like they don't want, like, you know, if Northern Ireland left the EU, they would literally have an unnecessary wall between them and the people who live 10 miles away.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the issue is a little bit different in different parts of the islands.
And it really captures the symbolism of like the blurred boundaries. Where are the borders and what do the borders mean? So I think you were saying maybe before, Austin, the idea of what is moving through a border and what's not. And that is all the manifestation of that Saturn Neptune symbolism.
Yeah. Well, it's a question of permeability, I think.
The other thing, I was watching some PBS commentary the other day, and something that he said that I found was really interesting, that I connected a lot more with sort of Saturn and Sagittarius, but certainly, you know, Neptune squaring Saturn and Sagittarius by transit would make sense. But he said that part of the vote, or part of the thing underlying it, was sort of he said it was a rejection of freedom of movement that had been established by the EU between member countries, based on some of the things that are going on with like immigration and the ability to like freely move between countries, and that this was more of like more of an inward looking, sort of partially nationalistic, but also sort of rejection of that sort of openness in some sense, which was leading, you know, some people to feel like there was too many people coming and going across the borders, and that this vote partially represented a sort of rejection of that, which is a very interesting symbolism in terms of Saturn, like in Sagittarius, and sort of a rejection of movement, or a rejection of sort of internationalism.
Yeah. Immigration has been the Saturn Neptune issue, right? Since it got started, whether it was refugees or it's people, you know, in England's case, it's primarily people coming from less well-off parts of the EU to work in England and being able to work there for long periods of time without excessive paperwork. Immigration, and we're dealing with immigration issues in the United States. That seems to be the single issue that has been most consistently brought to the forefront by the Saturn Neptune square.
You keep saying Saturn and Neptune, but what about Saturn just in Sagittarius? Because it seemed like that was our main theme for Saturn and Sagittarius, just in and of itself. Are you thinking that the Neptune square is more important, or are you saying that as sort of implicitly in Sagittarius at the same time?
Well, the whole configuration has done that.
Okay.
And it, like, some of our peak moments for immigration crises have occurred when Saturn and Neptune have tightened their square or perfected their square.
Got it. Okay. And you had mentioned this earlier, but this is also an observation that I had made, that it sort of didn't get reported as much because Brexit became the bigger story. But right around the same time, the U.S. Supreme Court deadlocked on Obama's major immigration act, which was supposed to be like a major staple of his presidency and his sort of legacy, which was this sort of legalization of millions of Americans millions of people that were from different countries that had immigrated to the U.S. Illegally. And it was essentially going to, sort of legalize a whole group of people, especially people that were brought here by their parents or that grew up in this country, but weren't necessarily citizens. And the Supreme Court deadlocked on that, which effectively put it back to the lower courts, which had already rejected it, which seems to basically put an end to this major piece of legislation that focused on immigration for Obama pretty much right around the same time, the same week, or within a few days of the Brexit vote. So again, we have this other theme in a completely different country, completely unrelated, but also tying in this concept of like immigration and like freedom of movement and things like that.
Yes. How permeable are the walls? Where is the water allowed to get through the wall? It's waves and walls. That's the theme. And, you know, it's worth noting, I believe we've talked about this before, but Saturn is in the superior position in that square. And so generally the planets that are in the superior position tend to triumph in squares for their duration, right? So, you know, if we had to bet, we'd probably bet on walls over waves. And that might suck and it might be the wrong thing, but astrology is full of suck and wrong, or it's not astrology. History is full of suck and wrong things.
Sure. So, and yeah, I mean, that sense of, you know, pulling back of conservatism or of rejection or saying no to something seems like it was really one of the underlying things that was motivating the Brexit vote, it seemed like, or at least I got the sense in terms of what most of the commentators were saying. So All right. Were there any other, so that's, you know, one of the most recent major pieces of news. In terms of other things, you know, there's two or three other major events. I mean, there's a lot of major events around the world, but just in terms of transits recently, I think that we wanted to mention.
Well, there was the horrific massacre in Orlando.
Right. So, and that was something that a lot of astrologers ended up tying into the Mars station, which was Mars had retrograded back and was slowing down and pretty much already within a degree of, and just hovering around that degree where it was going to station. And if I remember correctly, one of the things that's pointed out by different astrologers is that was hitting the chart of the shooter very closely. Somebody was able to get a hold of his birth time.
Well, and I mean, it was Mars in general. I mean, it was right after Mars opposed Algol. There was a Mars Mercury opposition basically on Algol. And the Mars opposite Algol was actually the, if you remember back to the Mars retrograde episode we did with Nick, that one of the horrible precedents, when we looked back at the last time Mars retrograde in this part of the sky during the spring or second quarter of 1937, that's when the Guernica bombing, occurred, and it occurred with Mars retrograde in Scorpio opposite Algol.
Sure. And you'd said that there was another time frame when Mars had done that you felt like this probably raised the likelihood then that there was another massacre of some sort during that time as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, that we looked at that months ago and said, let's hope that nothing like this happens again.
Right. No, I mean, you were talking about like Fallujah or something being another period where Mars was.
I was concerned that we'd have a replication of lots of civilian casualties in the middle of a messy war in the Middle East. I was thinking Syria, but you know, there's been a really fierce battle to retake Fallujah in Iraq. There have been multiple offensives against ISIL/Daesh over June. People, for some reason, people aren't really talking about it in American news. But the Russians and the Americans and the Iraqis have all been doing huge offensive pushes. And sort of one of the biggest single things is retaking Fallujah, in Iraq. And Fallujah has, you know, something like 100,000 non-combatants in it, or it did, before this campaign began. And so I hope that wasn't horrific. I haven't seen much. I hear reports that, yes, they've retaken 1/3 of the city. But the details, haven't come out yet. So let's hope that has been gone as well as that possibly can in terms of the toll that it takes on human life and suffering.
And you guys were mentioning Algol, and so that caused me to actually pull up the charts again, because I forgot a student of mine, sent this New York Times article where they had the birth chart or the birth, certificate of the shooter, in the Orlando shooting. And I pulled it up. It's around a time. It's 7 p.m., but it gives, you might be interested, even though this is kind of, you know, getting into something that we've talked about before in terms of the appropriateness of like looking at charts and things in the immediate aftermath. But anyways, he has Cancer rising and the moon is at 29 Taurus. I thought you'd be interested to know.
Oh, that's right. And so Mercury was right on that and Mars had just opposed that.
Yeah. And so his moon is the ruler of his ascendant, which is one of the most important planets in the entire chart, is actually conjunct Algol, or pretty close to Algol in the natal chart. And also interesting, his sun is at 24 Scorpio and his Mars is at 23 Aquarius. So that's actually really interesting, because if you compare the Brexit chart, has Mars at Mars and Pluto at 24 Scorpio and Saturn at 23 Aquarius. So the point here is just like two prominent charts sort of tied into that Mars retrograde station at 23 Scorpio, becoming activated at that time because they had important placements at, you know, 24 Scorpio or 23 Scorpio, 23 Aquarius. And that just being a real stark, not necessarily pleasant, demonstration of that basic sort of fundamental astrological principle. All right. Do you guys have any other comments about that, or any other news?
Did anything good happen in June? Can we just end our recap with something vaguely positive or pleasant?
Sure. Positive things.
Let's put our thinking caps on.
No, because all I can think of is just other drama, like the president of the NCGR, who I just interviewed last month, John Marcosella, exactly. Like suddenly, unexpectedly stepped down in a very sort of dramatic sort of letter, very fiery letter on Facebook, on the Facebook NCGR page, and suddenly said he's not going to be president anymore, and he's not organizing UAC anymore, which then. And he seemed to be singling out some person in particular or something that was causing him problems. And then the next in command of the NCGR then stepped up and became president. So that was not very pleasant. That was another bad sort of something that was probably tied into the Mars retrograde station, with that hitting prominent parts of either his chart or the person who took over the organization itself. In terms of positive things, I have a positive thing that the season finale of Game of Thrones is tonight. I mean, that's something I think we can both agree on has been pretty good over the course of the past month, right, Austin?
I think last week's episode, the penultimate episode was a positive thing. That was Mars acting as a benefic. That was a hell of a battle.
Right. So heroism or, yeah, bravery in battle, but also just like they really depicted the brutality and like the gore and like the downsides of battle, which is something there was a lot of commentary leading up to it about whether they would, because that was something that was much more prominent in the novels, and it wasn't always clear if like battles and war and stuff was being glorified too much in the television series. But even though there was some element of that in that episode, there was also like, you know, it was very stark in a number of ways that's not usually depicted in most like war films.
You did not do that on purpose, did you? It was very stark.
Right. let's not, we want to be careful not to give away any spoilers just for those who, you know,
there were Starks involved. That's all you need to know.
Okay. Maybe right. We'll leave it at that.
I can't comment on this. I have not been watching the show.
Okay, so reality was horrific, but the television was good at being distracting during
the show. I read some great books, so.
Me too.
Yeah.
Awesome, okay.
So there we go.
All right.
So to real life for happy news.
Yes. So moving along then to the future. So casting an eye to the future. So Mars is actually stationing direct this week at the very end of this month. So we haven't even fully hit the final act of that, because it hasn't fully done it yet. So there may still be some things coming in terms of the end of June. And I'm sure there will still potentially be some after effects that sort of ripple out from that over the course of the next few weeks in July, I think we could say, right?
Totally. A planet like Mars starting to move forward again after a period of stagnancy or treading water. There's a couple of ways that I would read this for sure. Heading into July, look, Mars is at its station degree until about the 10th or the 11th of July. So it's a month that might start slow, but it was also a month that can bring some progress on matters that have been delayed since February or March, when Mars first hit this part of Scorpio before the retrograde. So it's stuff that's been stuck is now starting to move, you know, move through the systems. Or there's a very famous line from an Australian poem. Well, you probably heard The Man from Snowy River, which it was made into a movie, was originally a very famous Australian poem. The first line of that is, "There was movement at the station." And that's what July feels like, that we're starting to get some kind of wheels turning, even if they start slowly. Not necessarily saying it's all going to be good, but things that have been stuck or hard to move, or people have been putting a lot of effort in just to try and maintain their current position, you will start to get progress through July with that planet coming off station.
Totally. Yeah.
It's important to note, like Kelly said, that even though Mars stations direct on, was it the 29th or the 30th? It at the very end of June, Mars isn't going anywhere. It's not like, it's not like the start of a race where somebody fires the gun and everyone's off. Mars is like, okay, now I'm barely moving forward. right? Yeah. And so doesn't leave that single degree for, you know, for like 10 days after the direct station. But what's important is momentum and yes. direction, right? The direction is now forward. And if we look at the movement, it's accelerating forward, right? Accelerating yeah. forward, because Mars is going to be going faster and faster and faster and faster throughout the summer. And so we like that. We like it, even, you know, it's pointed in the right direction and picking up speed. And so that's really important. And so one of the things about July is that July pretty much contains Mars's third pass through the end of Scorpio. And then as soon as we get into August, I believe August 2nd, Mars is going to be back in Sag. And then we've got this whole Mars-Saturn co-presence thing, which is really going to define August. But we don't have that in July. It's just Mars turning around and getting moving again in July. And then we have all these planets in Cancer for the first half of July. And so there's really, you know, when I was writing about this for my monthly, there's this really this sense of getting a little bit of a break or needing a little bit of time to kind of reestablish coherence, to kind of put things back together, to, you know, to have a little comfort, maybe, you know, to get back up to speed. You know, planets in Cancer are really good at helping us take care of ourselves and take care of each other. Because as the month begins, we have Mercury, the Sun, and Venus in Cancer. And so what's really interesting about this trio, and on July 4th, we have the new moon in Cancer, right? So
yes.
We have Moon, Mercury, Sun, and Venus all in Cancer, right? Now, what's interesting about this is in this phase, Mercury and Venus are both invisible to the naked eye. They're both hiding behind the Sun's radiant skirts, right? And so what's cool is that if we look at the middle of the month, and this will be a big change in tone, because it'll occur just as Mars is starting to pick up a little bit of speed. Venus and Mercury both emerge back into visibility in Leo. They both pop out, and you can see them. You'll be able to see them again in the really low on the western horizon, and they'll be right there together. And so we have two heliacal risings after periods of absence, after both have made their superior conjunction to the Sun. And so that should be nice, honestly. And so that's really the second half of the month. You can see them. They'll be about, you know, by the middle of the month, they'll be about 10 degrees separate from the Sun, which means that you're going to need good atmospheric conditions. You're not going to be able to see them for long, but they're going to be peaking out, and they're both going to be increasingly visible. They're going to be climbing that western horizon at sunset for the second half of July. And so, you know, when planets go from invisible to visible, a lot of times those energies within us in those parts of our lives go from a period that is inward facing to a period that is outward facing, where you can see it in the world. Because that also coincides with a shift from Cancer, which is very inward facing, to Leo, which is very outward facing, I think that will be a significant shift in tone for what's happening, and a significant shift in direction for people.
Yeah, and that shift into fire signs, I mean, it becomes kind of a fiery summer on some sense as well. At least this month, with three planets shifting into fire signs over the course of the month, Venus, Mercury, and the Sun, and then Uranus stationing direct in Aries towards the end of the month as well, or stationing retrograde.
So right. There's a different feel to the second half of the month versus the first half of the month. With the first half of the month, we've got Cancer plus Mercury and Venus hidden, plus Mars, even though, as you said, Austin, we're facing in the right direction, but we don't really have momentum yet. And second half of the month, Mars does move off that station degree. And that is usually when we start to see the pace kicking in or movement happening. And then by that time, Venus is just about to move into Leo, Mercury soon to follow. And by the end of the month, the Sun, of course, as well.
I'm kind of surprised at how fast Mars starts picking up speed and gets out of Scorpio, you know, by the end of the month or by early August, so that it's really just, we've got one more month left of Mars and Scorpio at this point. And then it's done. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's just going to, you know, go by terribly quickly in terms of, you know, some of the major events that take place during the course of that and coincide with it. And looking at it now, it looks like towards the end of July, we get one more Mercury-Mars square, while Mars is at the end of one more Mercury-Mars hard aspect, where Mercury yes. catches up to Mars and squares it at the very end of Leo, while Mars is still at like 28, 29 Scorpio, right?
Yes. Yeah, it'll be about, I think it'll be 28 Leo okay. Scorpio. Yeah. And that literally is at the end of July, I think July 29 or 30.
Yeah. So that's almost like the last sort of hurrah of Mars and Scorpio in terms of, it seems like most of the year we've been dealing with different hard aspects between Mars and Mercury at different points.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it began in on January 4th or something. We had our first Mercury. We had a Mercury Mars square, like I think on New Year's or the day before New Year's.
And yes. Then Mercury were still in Libra Capricorn then.
And then Mercury station retrograde. And then we had another Mercury Mars square that time with Mars and Scorpio.
Yeah, Mercury in Aquarius. That was early March, I think.
No. That was literally when the year began. We got two Mercury Mars squares, 1 week before the year began.
Yes. Yes.
And then we had more Mercury Mars stuff. But yeah, yes. lots of
it's
Mercury
Mars. It's been a theme.
It has definitely been a theme.
Yeah, and then
so
we got
the last hurrah end of July is what you're saying, Chris.
Yeah, I think so. Because we had the opposition, of course, in June, and that was part of what Austin was focused, what both of you were focused on earlier in terms of Mars or Mercury hitting Algol and Mars opposing it, and both of those planets opposing each other around the same time in June. And then at the end of July, we have the final sort of completion of that with just Mercury now getting to Leo, being in the superior position, but then having one more confrontation with Mars in the process before both of them, you know, move out of that fixed sign. So, so I feel like that's sort of the last phase of this Mars retrograde period. By then, of course, Mars will be off of that station degree. So some of the people that have that, you know, as a sensitive point around 23, 24, Scorpio, give or take, it's already starting to move out of that range. So maybe it won't be affecting as much, but perhaps there's other people that have, you know, sensitive points at the very end of the fixed signs, the very beginning of the mutable signs that might, you know, have that coincide with something more significant for them.
All right. So I have some bad news. One, Mercury's retrograde in Virgo in September sees it square Mars a couple times.
We overlook something. Yeah, I didn't yes. look forward.
So look at September 12th. You will see Mercury at 20 Virgo square Mars at 20 Sag. And so that's on his way back. And so that means that Mercury will come back and do that again.
We've
got two more Mercury Mars squares. And I disagree that the Mars stuff is over.
Right, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, and that
it's over for you and your little planets in right. Scorpio. But okay. For those of us who are heavily invested in the first decan of mutable signs, you know, August is when Mars goes back through that first 8 degrees of Sagittarius for a third time. And for those of us who, I don't know, say have Mars at 4 Pisces and Saturn at 10 Virgo, that's much more interesting. And so, but if you got it during the Scorpio portion of the Mars retrograde, then yeah, July is the end of that. If you're, yeah. you know, if you're in, on team mutable, like Kelly and I, well, then August is when we're going to deal with it.
And so we should enjoy a break in July is what you're saying, Austin.
Yeah. No, or we should train, for round three. I've been training for round three.
And honestly, I do have to say I agree, because I found the Mars in Sag portion of this retrograde much more difficult. I breathed a sigh of relief when Mars went back into Scorpio at the end of May. And as you said, Austin, that's because personally, the mutable signs are much more significant for me. But Chris, you can, you know, we'll be looking to you for tips.
Yeah, I'm going to get a t-shirt printed up that says Team Fixed Signs, and you yeah. guys can get Team Mutable Signs printed yes. up, and we'll see who survives the summer. So I forgot that I'm supposed to be mentioning like electional charts in this whole little thing we're doing. So the first electional chart, and as usual, because I've taken time off to write, Lisa Scheim has been doing the electional charts for us, and she has a set of four charts for us to use this month again. Starting out pretty early in the month, on July 4th, we've got our first auspicious electional date. So it's on July 4th, 2016, with Virgo rising around, let's say, 11:20 in the morning. So 11:20 a.m., we've got about 20 degrees of Virgo rising. This is a day chart. The ruler of the ascendant is Mercury, which is at 10 degrees of Cancer in the 11th whole sign house. Mercury is applying sort of under the beams. It's applying to conjunction with the sun, but also a sextile to Jupiter, which is in Virgo, conjunct the ascendant in the first whole sign house. So Mercury is actually applying to that with reception. So the ruler of the ascendant is relatively well placed and applying to a benefic. There's a benefic in the first house. And then also this is just after that new moon that takes place in Cancer at about 12 or 13 Cancer. And the moon in this chart is actually waxing. So it's separating from the sun. So we're on the new moon side, or the waxing side of the new moon, moon in Cancer in the 11th whole sign house, applying to a conjunction with Venus, which is at 20 degrees of Cancer, also in the 11th house. So this is an amazing chart for 11th house type activities, both because it has a huge focus there of both the ruler of the ascendant and just a stellium of planets in the 11th house, but it's also relatively well placed in terms of the ruler of the seventh, or ruler of the 11th, and all those planets applying to benefics. I guess the moon's actually technically applying to a sextile with Jupiter, so this is an even better chart than I initially thought. So things revolving around the 11th house that have to do with friends, alliances, groups, social movements, and other things would be well suited for an election like this. I've been reworking this chapter on the original significations of the houses in Hellenistic astrology for my book. And one of the things I thought was really interesting that comes up really early in the tradition is just the idea that the 11th house also has to do with like hopes or aspirations, because it's the house that's rising up towards the highest part in the chart. It's not there yet, but it's getting there, or it has like its sights sort of set on getting there.
I did a lecture at Norwalk just recently on the 11th house and, you know, kind of why it's so positive. And that was one of the things that I had stumbled across in my research, is the idea of the aspiration. A planet in the 11th house is reaching towards or rising towards the midheaven and knows that it's going into that more prominent position. And yeah, that's where the idea of the hopes and wishes comes from. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So
I think that when I think of these significations for the 11th, I think of it in terms of the philosophical question of the good life. You know, what is the good life? What defines the good life? And as we know, the 11th house has this title of being the house of the good spirit, or the eudaimon, right? And it's sort of like, what is the good life? What does it mean? It's the place where Jupiter takes his joy. Like, what is the vision of life? What are right relations with people? What's right work? Like all of this, you know, this sum total vision of like, what's the good life? And I feel like that's, you know, a big part of the 11th house aspiration. What is the life that you envision? Not the life that you have.
No, it's very aspirational. It's about, where do you want to go, or how do you want it to improve in some way? What are you aspiring towards?
Sure. And then the related concept then in Greek is eudaimonia, which is the Greek word for like happiness. Like,
yes.
How do you achieve happiness, or what does happiness mean to you? So more broadly, it's like this might be a good chart for some of those broader themes in terms of what are you, you know, aspiring to achieve? What sort of hopes and dreams do you have your eyes set on? And would you like to accomplish or set into motion at this time and for the long term? And, you know, what sort of things can you initiate now in your life that might bring about greater levels of whatever it means for you to be happy? Since that sometimes varies from person to person in terms of what happiness means sort of subjectively to each person.
Mm. 100%. And also maybe even to the idea of the benefactors or people that might help support that happiness. So this is a really nice chart.
Yes, this is a great chart. So I think I tried to try to set up like a interview with somebody for a podcast for this, but it didn't work out. So I might have to schedule another one for this election and we'll see if that works. Speaking of 11th house activities, so we're all going to be at the ESAR conference in October, right?
Yep.
Looks like it.
All right. So that is, of course, our sponsor for this month, and they're hosting a major, basically the conference event of 2016 in October in, what's the location again? It's in California?
It's in Orange County. It's a little south of LA.
And that's not too far from where you live, right?
No, I think it's about 45 minutes without horrendous traffic. So I'll just be driving down.
Maybe little party at Austin's house for all podcast listeners or something like that.
Yeah, we'll really channel.
Maybe not all podcast listeners. It's really not that large.
All right. Well, it'll be maybe more exclusive, maybe just like 100 people or so.
The top tiers. 100 people.
Okay. So this conference is taking place in Costa Mesa, California from October 13th through the 17th, 2016. The focus, of course, is on astrological forecasting. So it's a themed conference. Every once in a while, different conferences do like themes, and usually they're pretty goofy, but this one's actually not a bad theme. Their tagline is "The power of forecasting meets the consequence of choice," which I really want to find out who came up with that, because that's a pretty effective tagline compared to other sort of conference taglines that I've seen. So conference is going to feature more than 60 speakers from around the world, including us three. So, you know, Austin, Kelly, and I, and then, you know,
no, I forgot to apply. I'm not speaking.
It's just you, Chris.
Oh, what? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to be there. We'll have to see.
Which means we can have a lot of fun because
we're not speaking.
There's a lot of stress when you're speaking at a conference. So
you guys don't have to work.
Yeah. No. Kelly and I will cheers with our beers. And,
yes. We'll be in the perfect Pisces place.
Yeah. And we'll throw spit wads at you while you're frantically trying to finalize your PowerPoint.
Yeah, well, I'll be doing that, and then I'll be up on a stage for the presidential panel that's at the very end of the conference, and that's going to be the most tense sort of moment for me in terms of this being like a work day, is having to, get up on this panel of, I think, 5 or 6 people who are going to issue our predictions for who's going to win the U.S. presidential election, which will just be taking place like a week or two later, since this conference is in mid-October.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if that's not going to be terribly anticlimactic. I think there's a good chance that Hillary Clinton will just be like 5 or 10 points ahead. Like, it'll just be like a gimme. I have suspicions that it's not going to look very heated.
Sure. Well, we'll see. This election season has been nothing if not full of surprises so far.
Indeed.
So there'll be one presidential panel at the very end for people from the U.S., and then they're doing something unique by having another presidential panel from speakers from outside of the U.S., from other countries. And our good friend Nick Dagan-Best is going to be on that panel, which will be at the start of the conference.
What distant land does he hail from again?
He hails from this land of
country.
The snowy land of Canada.
Ah, yes, I've heard of it.
Right. I believe Kelly's visited there.
You guys are hilarious. What I didn't know, random trivial fact about Canada, according to average temperatures or some such number crunching, it is apparently the coldest country in the world.
Oh, really? Just on average in terms of all?
Yeah, I guess they have more consistently cold days than anywhere else. And
well, but is that counting all of Canada or the parts where people actually live?
Well, it would probably have to take into consideration all of Canada. Because,
I mean, when I look at the maps, it looks like Canada is crowding up to the, you know, the population density is like crowding up to the border to warm.
Of course, the majority of Canadians live within something like 100 miles of the border with the US, which is the most temperate part of Canada. It's what they call the tropical region, where all the bananas and pineapples come from.
Right. I mean, the hula dancing. And
yes. So anyway, there may not be hula dancing at ISAR. It's probably what you want to talk about, Chris.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, that's apparently what you guys are going to be doing while I'm up there, you know, doing work.
Doing something intelligent.
yeah, issuing, you know, predictions about world events and teaching people how to predict the future and little things like that. So it's going to be a great conference. We're giving away a free pass to it because ESAR partnered up with the Astrology Podcast in order to give away one free pass to one of our $10 tier patrons this month. I'll announce the winner of that on the next episode. If you happen to hear this episode and you're not signed up for that tier, there's still time to sign up in the next few days, as long as you do it before we do the final drawing for the giveaway. So you can find out more information about the ESAR conference at esarastrology.org. And if you go to the description page for this episode, you can find out more information about how to sign up for the drawing for the free pass. So we hope to see you there in October. All right. So
do you have another election, Chris?
Yeah, we've got, because there's two early in the month and then there's one in the middle and one later. So the other early in the month election is actually very similar. It's taking advantage still of those Cancer and Virgo placements. And this one's on July 9th at about 6 o'clock in the morning. So you'll have to stay up or get up extra early for this one because it takes place.
You might stay up. The rest of us would get up.
Yeah, I was going to make that joke. I realized I already made that joke last month about Austin staying up all night. So otherwise.
Yeah, I can't wait for night to get longer so I can stay up later. It's stupid. The sun rises at like 5 a.m. now.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying it though, in terms of like the sun being out until 8:30 at night. And then I'm sure you enjoy that part as well in terms of like actually seeing sunlight for more than 2 or 3 hours a day.
Oh, seeing sunlight is not a priority for me.
Oh gosh, such a vampire.
So speaking of sunlight, so this election takes place at 6 a.m., which is just after sunrise, essentially on July 9th, and it has Cancer rising, and the ruler of the ascendant is the moon, which is, at this time in Denver, it's at about 19 degrees of Virgo in the third whole sign house, third quadrant house as well, for that matter, and it's actually separating from a conjunction with Jupiter. So in this location, you can't catch the conjunction with Jupiter. If you live in another area, I think you might actually be able to catch the conjunction with Jupiter, which would be ideal. But even if you can't, what you end up with then is the moon separating from a conjunction with Jupiter and then applying to a sextile with Mercury and then a sextile with Venus. So it's almost actually a condition of enclosure where the planet is separating.
Mars.
The trine or sextile.
Mars is between the rays of Mercury and Venus. But that sextile with Mercury is also mutually received.
Yeah.
Which is mighty nice.
Through mutually received with who?
Well, Mercury and the moon are in each other's signs.
Oh, right. That one. I thought you were talking about Mars for some reason. Okay. So the moon is actually separating from Jupiter and then applying to Mercury, then a sextile to Mars, then a sextile to Venus. So still good. Still sort of broadly applying to flowing favorable aspects with three planets, including a benefic and separating from a benefic. If you are in a location that's further east on the globe than Denver, then you might be able to catch the moon applying to Jupiter, which would probably be even more optimal, but not a big deal if you can't.
I think in New York, they probably can, a hint before the time.
Yeah, I would just catch it between, while the moon is between Jupiter and Mercury. That mutual reception is really nice, and that'll power up, that'll power up the moon and the chart. I would just not catch it once it's departing from Mercury. It's sextiling Mars, and sextiles are hardly horrific aspects. But that Jupiter Mercury moon juice really seems like the best, the choicest moment in this one. So I wouldn't wait until midday to grab this.
Sure, just in terms of really emphasizing that mutual reception by making sure it's still applying.
Yeah,
definitely. So that connection just shows a huge emphasis in this chart. The last one had an emphasis on the 11th house. This is more of a third house emphasis, which third house, broadly speaking, has to do with things like writing, learning, education, travel in some sense. What are other good third house keywords?
You know, the third house actually also, I had read some references, so it also has a connection to friendships similar to the 11th because it makes that sextile to the first. So it can have that social quality to it as well.
Yeah, if you're going to start a gang.
Right.
No, I think I think of the third. I think of the third as like, it's people you see all the time. It's siblings. It's like the, you know, the guy at the gas station. Like it's, you know, it's like people who are kind of just around all the time, and it's social in that sense. You know, there's a certain, like, a lot of times you see like little circles of people that just hang out all the time. Where not everybody has a really intense relationship with everybody, but it's just sort of like the people that are always around, you know, your crew. So you could probably in a lot of locations, you could also wait a couple hours and get Virgo rising for the first 11th action with this chart too, because the moon's not that fast. Depends on where you are. I guess you'd have to be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean for that. So
listeners in Australia.
Yeah, for your listeners in Australia, you can probably get that.
If they did the 9th of July, it would be about 7 a.m. In Sydney. The moon is only at 11 Virgo, so they could certainly wait and come back later in the day for the Virgo
what about rising. All right.
But the other thing, third house stuff, Chris, writing, all kinds of that communication, verbal language-based stuff.
Yeah, which is a great like third house keyword, but even more so for this because of the emphasis on Virgo and Mercury, which even with some of the timing, because the sun and moon are about 60 degrees apart, that puts the lot of fortune also in Virgo, depending on your timing. So you can also get the lot of fortune in the third as well. So this would be a great chart for starting like a writing project or even like an education or learning project for that matter, since the third house often has that quality of going both ways in terms of, you know, output and also sometimes input.
I would also add with the third is the scheduling house. The third is like your weekly schedule. If you want to commit to a new schedule, for a writing project or for a health thing, whatever it is, but like committing to a schedule, would also, you know, starting a new regimen that day, would also be really good.
Sure. And I liked your point earlier about gangs because, which is funny, but actually makes sense just conceptually, because the fourth house is like your home base. The third house is often said to be like your neighborhood in some sense.
Yeah. And your stomping grounds.
Right. So what, you know, what do you do in your stomping grounds? And that would totally make sense.
Yeah. You just like it, you know, like going back to being a kid and you just kind of hang out with the other kids in the neighborhood and go around and, you know, hit rocks with sticks and get bored and ride bikes. When I teach the third house, a lot of times I address the joy of the moon in the third, which is happening in this chart. I make reference to the old, television series Cheers. It's the bar where everybody knows your name.
Nice.
Right. You know, it's not like they have all these really intense relationships with each other for the most part. Like they just all hang out there and it's comfortable.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So yeah, excellent. Another excellent election, July 9th, 6 a.m. Take advantage of it. I still keep coming back to writing, and that brings me to that invokes in sort of my memory that the Mountain Astrologer magazine is our other sponsor for this month. So you see how that smoothly transitioned into the second plug for...
Lovely segue.
Thank you.
Like a dancer.
Like an elegant dancer. So the Mountain Astrologer magazine, or TMA for short, is hosting our second sponsor this month. So for patrons on the $5 tier, one of our giveaways this month is a one-year subscription to the Mountain Astrologer magazine, which is a pretty awesome prize. TMA is published 6 times a year for nearly 30 years now. They're actually at their first Saturn return with Saturn in Sagittarius. And it's pretty much become, I think everybody generally agrees, I don't know if this is unspoken or if it's pretty overt at this point, that it's basically like the main publication for students of astrology as well as professionals, because it sort of keeps you connected to what's going on in the astrological community. I mean, would you guys agree with that?
Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an institution at this point.
Right. It's become an institution. And in some ways, like that's the print equivalent of like what I'm trying to do with the podcast here. And it provides a nice template in some sense in terms of how to really do high quality astrology, but also how to be inclusive in terms of, you know, they have articles on just about everything from just about every tradition or approach. And they don't really, you know, they don't, you know, keep anybody out. There's like no thing in astrology that TMA hasn't covered at some point or doesn't cover regularly, so that you'll have, even in the forecasting columns, like there was the longtime forecasting column by the late Jeff Jarre that he wrote there for years as a modern astrologer. And then right next to that, over the past few years, you've had my electional column, where I have more of a sort of blend between a traditional and a modern approach. But yeah, they've got tons of great articles. I think Austin and Kelly, you've both written for them, right?
Yeah. Yes. I think I've written two pieces, one on Marilyn Manson, who has the most fun chart ever. And then one on sect. And then I was interviewed about being under 40 and being an astrologer at some point.
Yeah, I've written for them as well. My most recent piece was on the third and sixth houses from a more traditional perspective. I think that might have been in the December, January, or the February, March issues earlier this year.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, that was just a few months ago. Somebody actually wrote in the latest issue, like, saying thank you, or that they really liked that piece or something.
Oh, I got a letter to the editor. That's good.
Yeah, you guys, you'll have to check it out. I don't know if it was just sort of talking about that article being really good, or that invoking something in them. So you'll have to take a look at that. So
it's a great magazine. I mean, regardless of the fact, even despite Austin and I writing for it, I think. Sure. And they do cover a lot. They have a beginner section, so people shouldn't feel intimidated. Like, you have to know a lot about astrology before getting into it. But there's also some more advanced stuff too. Great, so great publication.
I have a TMA anecdote. So when I first got really into astrology, I was maybe 19 and I was at college. I went to college in a really small town. And so I found, what I learned astrology with were a bunch of Noel Till Learn Astrology books that I got at the used bookstore and, at the sort of metaphysical shop, you know, where the place where they sell the crystals. They had a stack of like 50 Old Mountain Astrologers, and I bought the stack.
Wow.
And so that was so helpful. Yeah. Like half of my foundation in astrology is like a, you know, 3-foot stack of mountain astrologers.
Yeah. And I think just about every astrologer, because I always, when I'm, you know, traveling to lecture to different groups around like the country, I end up staying with usually like one of the group members. And every time I go to a new astrologer's house, they've always got like that stack of the mountain astrologers just like somewhere in their general library vicinity. Just because they do such a good job of like continually pumping out like high quality, you know, content. And there are always things that people want to sort of keep around. It's not usually something that people read and then sort of toss or something like that.
Yeah.
No, and there's a good mix of timeless information as well as current stuff. So they're definitely collector's pieces.
And just while we're singing the praises, I'm continually impressed by their editorial standard.
Right.
Both as a reader and having written, they're very thorough, which is hard to do in a publication that comes out so often. But yeah, it's, you know, it's the gold standard for astrology publications these days.
Totally. So, let's see, they have detailed forecast, student section. They have astrology humor and cartoons, which is, I think, one of the things.
Are they hilarious?
Yeah,
I do not think they're hilarious.
Really?
Oh my gosh. The one that always that like I never forget thing. Is the Virgo's worst nightmare, and there's a picture of a public pool. Fantastic, right? I used to give them to students when they're learning and they're trying to get their head around, like, is it the first thing you go to, Chris? Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, I totally. It used to be one of the first things I go to, is just seeing what the cartoon is for the month. It's all in good fun. So, TMA's blog, they have a blog on their website, and they also have like 15 years of back issues online that you can check out. For more information, visit mountainastrologer.com. All right. So, moving on. So we've covered our second election. I've got two more for later in the month, but is there anything like mid month or mid to late July in the second half of July that we need to mention?
Well, so what happens in the, you know, in the middle of July, which I mentioned earlier, is we get Mercury and Venus both in Leo conjoining and arising, heliacally rising in the West. So that's cool. I like that. It's going to be really fun and creative.
Yeah. So both of those planets are heliacally rising in the West. And do we know like when that's going to happen specifically, or like, is there a range that you're using for heliacal rising, like 15 or 8?
Well, so I'm using 10, because at 10 you can see them. If the conditions are right, but they're still, you know, they're still scarce. 15 is when they're no longer under the beams. And one of the things that that means is you can definitely see them, right? When something, when planets are separated by the sun from at least 15, it's really clear. But you can usually see them around 10. And there are some traditional sources that use 10 for visibility.
So that, I think, gives us the 13th of July for Venus. And it looks like maybe early on the 15th for Mercury.
Right. And so, that'll
using that, 10 to 15 window, Austin.
Yeah. And so that's like, and they're conjoining, right? So you're going to be able to look at
them coming out together.
So just in terms of visually, look to the west at sunset from the second half of July onward, and you'll be like, oh, there's Mercury and Venus. Also, something I've been noticing during the few times that I'm outside is that you can see Mars and Saturn and Antares so clearly right now.
Yes.
Look up, there's Mars. He's super bright and red. You look a little bit to the left, there's Saturn. And then a little bit below Saturn, you'll see Antares, which is red. And, you know, it's been cloudy here lately. And those are like the only things you can see. And there it is, Saturn, Mars, Antares. And so whenever you see that, remember that Mars is closing in on that and that those three are going to make this very dramatic conjunction towards the end of August. But it's like that's the thing, you know, and that's, I would say that's the real end of the Mars show, is the Mars, Saturn, Antares conjunction, which is until the end of August. But you can just watch it. It's so, they're all so bright.
Yeah, totally. Because that was, you know, one of our, that was when it all started, was that lineup of Mars and Saturn and Antares earlier this year, right?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite as tight. Saturn was maybe 5-6 degrees away.
Away.
But for the second round, they're all going to be lined up at 9. Antares, of course, is a fixed star, so it doesn't move. But Saturn and Mars have their conjunction, which they make every 2 years, right on top of Antares. And it just so happens that is only 1 degree beyond the degree that Mars stationed retrograde at. So,
nice. Well, since you mentioned the conjunction and heliacal rising of Mercury and Venus, actually, my next election takes place on the day that they conjoin. So maybe I should mention that really quickly. So this is the next chart that Lisa found, which was July 16th of 2016 at about 4:40 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, with early Sagittarius rising. So the chart has Sagittarius rising. Jupiter is in Virgo in the 10th whole sign house, potentially conjunct the MC depending on your location. Jupiter's in the 10th. The moon is in Sagittarius in the 1st, applying to a square with Jupiter with reception. Saturn is in the 1st house in the chart. However, it's a day chart, so Saturn's a bit less malefic. And Saturn is also being overcome through superior square from Jupiter with reception and through a superior trine from Venus in Leo. So I really think, you'll get some sort of Saturn things from having Saturn in the 1st house in the election, but you're going to more or less get many of the more positive sort of aspects of Saturn in Sagittarius than you might otherwise if it was a night chart, or if, you know, Mars was squaring Saturn or something like that. So Mercury and Venus are conjunct at 5 degrees of Leo in the 9th whole sign house. If you can adjust things, I'd probably recommend putting the ascendant at like 5 degrees of Sagittarius in order to trine the Mercury-Venus conjunction, in order to give it a little bit of a boost of sort of extra power, despite being in a cadent or declining house. Mars is more or less successfully hidden away at 24 degrees of Scorpio in the 12th house, not hugely impacting anything major in the chart. And I think that's about it. It's a major emphasis on the 10th house with the ruler of the ascendant there, and then on the 9th house secondarily with the ruler of the 10th. Placed there, and with that Mercury-Venus conjunction being one of the closest aspects in the entire chart and taking place in the 9th. So career matters, travel matters, education, so on and so forth would be good activities for this type of chart. All right. So later in the month, I guess now we're moving on towards the end of July. Are there any other major signatures or things that you guys wanted to mention?
Not really. I mean, the sun follows Mercury and Venus into Leo. Right. So it's, you know, it gets Leo-ier and Leo-ier as the month continues. You know, by the time we get to, the 22nd, you know, we have Sun, Venus, and Mercury all in Leo, right? That's a lot of fire and a big contrast to the beginning of the month when we had that trio all in Cancer.
Right. So, and then, so just before we get there, we've got a full moon in Capricorn on July 19th, which may or may have already been mentioned. I can't remember if it was.
No, we haven't talked about it yet.
Okay. So full moon in Capricorn. Then the Sun ingress into Leo, you just mentioned July 22nd.
That's a somewhat disruptive full moon in Capricorn.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because it's in a T-square with Uranus, and Mars is aspecting both the Sun and the Moon.
That'll do it.
Anytime it will.
Okay, so we've got a full moon in Capricorn square Uranus, and Uranus is getting juiced up itself because it's actually getting ready to station retrograde at that point.
Yes. So somewhat volatile.
Yeah. And so it might be about managing volatility. You know, Capricorn and Cancer are both about creating stability and control. You know, Cancer is really about doing that more internally and emotionally. And then Capricorn's about doing that externally. But they're, you know, they're both about like creating, they're both about, about locking things down, hope, you know, in a good way. And so with both of them in a square with Uranus, it's departing, but it's only 3 degrees departing. There are challenges. There are going to be challenges there may be challenges to what stability has been achieved or recovered. Or you might need to make, you know, you might need to integrate a new development into the you know, your situation. Mars aspecting them heats it up, but Mars is aspecting them by sextile for the Moon and by trine for the Sun. So hopefully it's working with that and integrating part of what we've learned through this very long period of Mars and Scorpio into these new situations and arrangements.
Sure. So that takes place at what, 27 degrees of Cancer and Capricorn?
Yeah.
Okay. And Uranus is at 24 at that time. So like you said, it's only like 3 degrees off.
Yeah. And Mars is at 25.
Yeah. And the Moon will just literally in the hours leading up to the full moon becoming exact, the Moon will square Uranus. So it sort of it goes into that full moon it'll separate directly most immediately from Mars. And then, so we've got like the Mars square Uranus sextile, sorry, the Moon square Uranus sextile Mars, and then going into the opposition with the Sun for the full moon.
Yeah, it's going to carry that charge. You know, one thing that's worth noting about July is that even though Mars and Uranus do not form a traditional aspect between them, as the Moon goes about its business, there are going to be areas where the Moon is going to hit Uranus and Mars in quick succession. Mm-hmm. And this is the most dramatic one of those. But for example, when the Moon is at the end of Leo, which will be during the first week of July, it will trine Uranus and square Mars in quick succession, right? Any sign that can see both of those, you're going to get from Uranus and Mars to the Moon.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, so let's see. So my last election of the month, which pretty much brings us to the end of July, takes place on July 30th at about 5:10 p.m. With Sagittarius, about 21 Sagittarius rising. So this is basically like the last chart where the focus is having Jupiter, the ruler of the ascendant, in Virgo in the 10th pole sign house. The main difference is now that Mercury has just ingressed into Virgo. So Mercury's at 0 degrees of Virgo in the 10th whole sign house. So now all of a sudden you have the ruler of the 10th and the 7th in the 10th with the ruler of the 1st and the 4th. So one of the things that this one's a little bit better for, I think, would be 7th house activities like partnerships and potentially 4th house activities, but especially 7th house activities, because now you have the ruler of the ascendant and the ruler of the 7th finally applying, or at least in the same sign, and then eventually widely applying to each other, will they at some point form a conjunction. So that's the core of the chart. The other part of the chart is that the moon is in Cancer. It's just ingressed into Cancer, and it's applying. The timing's kind of weird, but it's sort of separating from a sextile with Mercury and very widely applying to a sextile with Jupiter eventually about 20 degrees later. But it's at least in its own domicile. It is in the eighth house, so you would want to potentially try to use it for some more positive eighth house type things, dealing with financial matters or other people's money or loans or other sorts of financial exchanges of that matter that have to do with other people. The ninth house is also relatively well placed with the sun in Leo ruling the ninth house and relatively well situated. So it could be a good chart for ninth house type activities. It's not quite as strong as some of our earlier July electional charts, but it's a serviceable election if you've got to do something at 5 o'clock in the evening around the very end of the month on July 30th. And I think that brings us to about the end of the month. Is there any other major things that we meant to touch upon that we didn't get a chance to?
I think it's a good summary of July. It's a different month than what we've had through the first half of the year.
Yeah, it's really different.
And different, I think, in what many of us perhaps will kind of internalize or experience as different in a good way or different in a slightly more calm way. I liked what you said, Austin, about the idea of, you know, the Cancer planets earlier in the month. You know, it's somewhat a chance to recuperate or train for what's ahead,
depending on your... It's a little bit more sustainable. You know, it's moving forward and sort of getting yourself ready to move forward. You know, there's it's not like leisurely, right? But it feels like the pace is not, well, the pace is certainly not as breakneck as it was during June. You know, like things are going to move a little slower and they're going to kind of tend to move in the right direction or at least towards resolution. And so I think there'll be a lot less ambient stress.
A lot less ambient stress. I like that. That's good.
That's a beautiful, beautiful summary.
Yeah. Especially I'm looking, as we said earlier, looking forward to all of us fixed signs having a sigh of relief as we get through, you know, the rest of Mars and Scorpio and let you guys take over with the mutable placements in August when Mars moves into Sagittarius.
Yeah. The August is a very different deal. And so is September.
Yes. So stay tuned for that next month.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, I guess that's it. So you guys have already said what your news, what you'll be working on. I'll be writing. Austin Kelly, you'll both be teaching and doing consulting and all of the good things that you do. Where can people find out more information about your work again?
AustinKopick.com. So it's AUSTIN and Kopick is COPPOCK.
And I'm at KellySAstrology.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks guys for joining me. And I guess, Kelly, I'll be talking to you again in just a few days for the question and answer episode.
Yes. And with Lisa too, I think.
Yeah. Lisa Scheim will be joining us, who contributed all of the excellent elections this month. And her website, I should mention really quick, is lisascheim.com. And so we'll be talking again in just a few days. And then Austin, we'll see you again next month for the next forecast.
Hopefully.
All right. Yeah. So hopefully if we all make it through in one piece in the next 4 weeks. All right. Well, I guess we'll call it a day for this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to rate it on iTunes. That's always appreciated. We also appreciate all of our patrons and supporters through Patreon who sign up to donate a dollar or more each episode just to help keep the lights on and keep the show coming. So you can find out more information about that, I think, at theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. So that brings us to the end of the July forecast. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.